Thank you so much for being here. It's a delight for me to see some familiar faces. Over the last 3 years, I have been coming to Oroville, and this is the place I have shared some of my ideas. Today, I will speak about the history and future of unity. Now, the word unity has been around for a long time. Many people, many biologists, many people insist that we have come from the chimpanzees, from the monkeys, from the apes, and we have evolved from them. But monkeys have not evolved to make a city of 500,000 people, or 2 million people, 4 million people. They are still in their small little herds, whereas we as human beings have evolved as a group, as a community. We are now sometimes 50 people, sometimes 1,000, sometimes 500,000, sometimes 15 million, 20 million people in one city. So this is something very special about human beings. And so when that happens, then it also poses some special problems, special challenges. How do we live together as a unified group and with respect and courtesy for each other, recognizing each other, and so on. And it places some all those challenges, some of which I will share with you. But that distinguishes us very greatly from other creatures from where we evolved. A friend of mine, a biologist and evolutionist, he says, it's not enough to say that we came from monkeys. The question is, what kind of monkeys are we to become? Where are we going? What is our evolution? Most of the evolution in the last 100,000 years is not driven by biology. It is not biological evolution. It is driven by culture, by human efforts, by human organization. And the word culture is very all-encompassing. So what is it, how we organize, what we do with each other, and so on. That is what has driven human evolution in the last at least 100,000 years. Just to give you two examples, which makes sense to everyone. In the last 110 years or so, in the beginning of the last century, average life expectancy in most countries in the world, even in advanced countries like European countries, and United States, Canada, the life expectancy was between 38 and 40. That was the life expectancy. In Canada, it was 37. And now, everywhere, it is over 80 in the Western world. So this is doubled in 100 years. This is a biological change that has come about, not because of biological efforts, but because of cultural efforts. Cultural efforts. Same is true about the height of people. Same is true about the age of puberty among these boys and girls. It is going down every year, every decade, in most parts of the world. So these are biological changes that are coming about in our bodies, in our beings, but it is not come about because of biological evolution, it is because of cultural evolution. Other factors, very important, very, very important, sometimes we forget these things. 200 years ago, when the human population was about a billion people, about a billion, the human population all over the earth. Now we are over 7.5 billion. At that time, less than 12% of the population could read and write. 200 years ago, when the population, human population was 1 billion, less than 12% of the population could read and write. In the French Revolution occurred in 1789, 70% of people could not sign their name. Now, in 2018, 86% people can read and write. So change, numbers are changed around. Very important. Because now increasingly, 200 years ago, most of the people were engaged in producing food. We are farmers, everywhere, producing food. Now less than 3% people in the Western world are producing food. So our brain is being used differently, our thoughts, our things, what do we read and what goes in. And increasingly, we say our thoughts change our brains. There's a book that came out from a Canadian psychiatrist a few years ago called How the Brain Changes Itself. So I bring all these things because what we do with ourselves, what kind of work we do with hands, with our legs, with our bodies, so on, that has changed dramatically. And we have to give consideration in order to understand the nature of evolution. Now, just last year, yes, we are just finishing the first month of year 2018. Yes, first, in February, just 3rd February, 4th February. There's just last year, a month, at the end of December, there was an article in New York Times. It said 2017 is the best year in the human history. 2017, it said, is the best year in the human history. And the person who wrote the article, he said, last year I wrote another article, and I said 2016 was the best year. And then he says, I want to be around in 2018, so I want to say that 2018 is the best year. And then he says, why? Why is 2017 the best year? He says, more people are educated today than ever in the human history, percentage-wise, an absolute number. He says, more people are less poor today and are nourished today than ever before in the history. More people, more children are living longer than ever before. In infant mortality in most countries is going down dramatically. It used to be very high. 300 children born out of 1,000 children used to die before the age of 5. 300%. So now, in Western countries, it is a news when some child dies. Like this. It's the news, say it's the news and news papers. So, and then he gives a lot of statistics like this, how it has gone down and people are more educated, better off, more freedoms, and so on, and that it is the best year. And less also, he says, less violence than ever before. You know, even though we all get very sad and bombed down and say, you know, killing here, terrorism here, and so on here, but it is, if you look at statistically and you look at a slightly longer time period, you begin to see that it is lesser than before. Lesser, not that it's gone altogether, but lesser, and that is something to celebrate. But when I read this, I said, well, this is true. But there are some things other than, because most people think, when I talk to my students in Canada, I teach in an institute called Life Institute at the University of Ryerson. And that the students there are all over the age of 50. This is a special institute. They're not taking degrees, they're not earning degrees, they're there just for pleasure. So when I asked last time in the class, I said, how many people think we are better? We're living in a better life, a better age than before. And only 5% people raised their hands. He said, this is a miserable life. Everybody starts whining and bitching and complaining about something or the other. And I said, really? And then when you give statistics, they say, that's not quite what they are looking at. Now we have more inequality in the world than ever before. 1% of the people in the world own more than 50% of the wealth. In India, there was just a news item just last week. Mukesh Ambani is one of the richest men of India. He's probably the richest man of India. He just built a house in Bombay, 27-story house with 600 rooms in it, 3 helipads where helicopters can come, helipads, 168 parking spots. I don't know how many friends he has, but, and it's the richest home ever built by one person, over $1 billion. You know, I'm sure some of you have visited Mumbai, Bombay. There are a lot of slums around, a lot of people who are, you know, struggling to survive. So it seems very strange that one person will have so much wealth, and it is true, so much so, it is true in USA, it is true in many countries in Europe, that so much wealth is concentrated in the hands of so few, and people say, this is not right, this is not fair, this is not just, it's not just. So this can bother you, and you know, a lot of people are bothered by it, but this is not right. So depending on what you want to look at life and say, what is it that is makes you feel okay, good, that women have more rights, more freedoms, and so on. But other questions come up and say, what about this? What about this? What about this? So these are some of the things that are very, very, very important in our consideration of the idea of unity. Now, the word unity, union, has been used extensively, as I said, in the history. We have United States of America. We have United Nations. Karl Marx talked of the workers of the world unite. We have trade unions. We have, you know, other unions of associations. So the word union, coming together. So the idea is not new. People said, well, if you combine together, the united you stand and divided you fall. You know, this idea is very important because ultimately, the more people can be together for a cause, it takes you farther. You're more likely to be successful. So it makes sense. But everybody also feels that it is falls apart. It doesn't work quite as well. We see this in the European Union. And some people want to pull out, as England is pulling out soon. And there's some other question, is it how good it is? But just to remind you that Europe has the longest period of peace in the last 70 years than it has had in 1,000 years. Yeah, it's not, and except for Yugoslavia, it has not had wars within Europe, which used to be very much there all the time. So the idea of unity, of being together, has been around. And the phrase that expresses it most succinctly and most emotionally is that the world is like a family. And we have this in Indian Upanishads, a very beautiful saying, Vasudeva Kutumbakam. The whole world is a family. The whole world is a family. Now, all of us know that families are falling apart a bit. There are a lot of families that are not so collegial, not so friendly. And a lot of women, particularly, are exercising, feeling that there are a lot of families are patriarchal. There's authority of men over others. And so the family is being questioned. And also, notion of family, I often say that most people don't know who the member of the family is. We don't know. When I went to Canada at the age of 21, I had never seen a white person before I went there. And it was a shock. I thought all white people are quite handsome. I didn't find them all handsome. And then I had never seen a black person from Africa. I never met a Christian before I went there. So it was a bit of an eye-opener for me. He said, these are also members of the family, but I didn't know. I don't know they're members of the family. How they eat, what do they laugh about, what is their character. And let me put it in a very important way. First time, only about 500 years ago, 1492, first time, the world, half the world begins to discover the other half. In 1492, Columbus' arrival in the New World. Before that, almost one half didn't know the other half existed. And would it surprise you that for a long time the Catholic Church was not sure that the people they have discovered, are they human or not? Are they human? Because if they're not human, how can you make them into Catholics? I'm not exaggerating. This was a real debate that went on in the Vatican for 65 years. And it was only in 1555 that finally said, yes, they are human. And they should be treated humanly. And we can make them into Christians. So you see how the debate, so you can say, yes, they're members of the family, but we don't think they're members of the family. We are increasingly everywhere in the world discovering who the other is. And as we discover, it's not always easy. As many Europeans are finding, Muslims are coming from some parts, they say, how do we live with them? How do we adjust with them? And there are a lot of tensions in some parts of the world. And so these are real challenges, and we cannot wash them away. We cannot live in some kind of spiritual bubble and think everything is hunky-dory. Things are, and there are challenges. So idea of family, and then family, how family is evolving, and how it is changing, and then giving space to the other. The word that is defining our times, very crucial. Increasingly, everywhere, people are saying, I need a place of dignity on the banquet table of history. I need a place of dignity. I may be a disabled person, I may be fat, I may be short, I may be black, I may be gay, I may be whatever. That doesn't matter who I am, that I need a place of dignity on the banquet table of history. This is a new watchword in human history. Dignity. And even a person who's dying, he says, I want to die with dignity. And I should have the right to die with dignity. So this idea of dignity has become very crucial. Now, some of you may know, in 1960s, there was a disease. Some people took a special drug. And what is it called? It was supposed to be for people who were women who were suffering from sickness, morning sickness. And when they took this drug, and children, over 150,000 children were born in many countries who didn't have legs, who didn't have arms. What was the disease called?
Thalidomide.
Which one?
Polio.
No, not polio.
The drug was called
thalidomide. Thalidomide babies. There came to be known thalidomide babies. Thank you. It just escaped my mind. Thalidomide babies. Now, I had studied thalidomide babies. I had written about it in one of my books. But I never met one. And then suddenly in one place, I was on a ship, on a cruise, and suddenly I see in the evening, there is a wheelchair, and the wheelchair is just going round and round and round by itself. And I said, wow, how crazy. And it was being pulled by a thalidomide baby who was 58 years old. And he had no legs, no arms, but he had a little motor, and he's dancing. And I thought it was amazing that, you know, that we begin to see the humanity of somebody who has otherwise no legs, no arms. And you can just, you know, these people have been missed, dismissed. Blind people with disabilities have not been recognized in most parts of the world for so long. And suddenly I talked to his caretaker, and they said, well, the sister was the caretaker. So she said, well, we have been taking care of him all these years. So amazing, it touched me deeply, that a person, where is the person's humanity? Is it in here, in legs? Is it in legs here? And then how does a person recognize his own, our own humanity? So whether you are disabled or you are a person of a different sexual orientation, or a woman, or this or that, and many kinds. We have many kinds of members of the family, human family. And everywhere, I feel, everywhere increasingly, everybody say, I want a place of dignity on the banquet table of history. This is the new slogan, a new demand, a new expectation. And so who should provide it? The state, the government, the person, the family, and neighbors, and so increasing. Now in Canada, we don't even say a person has disabilities, we say a person has exceptionalities. The language is changing. Persons of exceptionalities. Because language tells you, creates a reality, if it's so. When you call a person untouchable, that tells you something. When you say, no, that's not the right word to call a person, right? Or you call a person nigger, or you call a person a slut, or you call a person bastard, you don't create images. What kind of images? And now increasingly we are becoming conscious that certain words need to be watched because they hurt the other person. They hurt the other person's sense of dignity. And so we must not use them. And we must find words that are recognize the other person's dignity. So I say this to you in the context of situations that are. The whole idea of unity is not that we combine together. Now we say sometimes unity in the diversity. No, I think we need to take it a step further. Unity, diversity, and uniqueness. Uniqueness, that each person is unique. Each person is unique. To acknowledge that uniqueness is the role of every father and mother and neighbor and school teacher and a friend, because each person is unique. However much we may have common between each other, even the identical twins are also unique. And there's many things more common between them than between two brothers or strangers, but they too are unique. There's a lovely, beautiful line of the great art historians of India, Ananda Kumar Swami. He says, an artist is not a special kind of man. Every man is a special kind of artist. An artist is not a special kind of man. Every man is a special kind of artist. Uniqueness is very important, because increasingly when we talk of dignity, people say, I'm unique. Sometimes we don't even know ourselves that we are unique, in what ways we are unique. But how to recognize it, to make room for it, and to say, to allow, give you freedom for it. So unity will not survive unless we acknowledge the uniqueness of each person. Otherwise people rebel. It's just a crowd, just a crowd. So many nations have, you know, when they force you, things, you must learn this language, you must not learn this, etc. So this is kind of fascism. So uniqueness, diversity, and unity, they all go together. They all go together. And many times, out of this, you have a sense of empathy, you have compassion, you have sympathy. These are noble sentiments, noble sentiments. And I give you an example of this, a very remarkable example. In the 1960s in USA, there were a lot of denial of civil rights to the black people, particularly in some states of USA, but southern states of USA, Alabama, Mississippi, North Carolina, Georgia. These are places in Jersey, anybody who's from the USA knows it well, that it was denied, they were treated very poorly. They still are not treated all that well, but they were treated very poorly. And so one man, a white man, who was very driven by a spiritual urge, he said, he was 33 years of age, he said, I want to know what is it, does it feel like to be a black man? So, he was white. He changed his skin through certain operations. Changed his hair, changed his eyelashes, hair, everything. So much so, his own family did not recognize him. He became black. And then for the next 3 years, he wandered all over the place. And he experienced all the humiliation and the bad experiences black people. You have washrooms, you cannot go here. You have restaurants, you can't enter here. You have rooms for rent, you cannot rent here. And so on, for 3 years. And then he wrote a book called Black Like Me. It's a classic. If you don't know it, I recommend it to you. A book by John Griffin, and called Black Like Me. It also became a film. So when it was finally revealed that he was actually a white man, he was writing about black experiences and writing it so succinctly, and he exposed the treatment in very vivid language. So the blacks, people felt quite excited that somebody would have the daring to do this. And the white people felt, he's an imposter. And there were attempts on his life to kill him, that he's brought shame to us. So I share this with this because in a way this whole idea of unity cannot make very much sense unless we recognize that a lot of people throughout our history, human history, and it is a certainly history of civilization is not all that old, it's 10,000 years old. History, during that period, people have been left out, people have been maligned, they have been mistreated. Because of their religion, because of their gender, because of their color, because of their race, and so on. And now increasingly, as we enter the new century, a new millennium, more and more people, in my experiences, are finding out that this is not right. This is not right. Now, I live in Canada for the last many years, and Canada has made some remarkable steps in that direction. And I feel proud. And I feel in some ways, I've lived there now for over 45 years, so I feel in some small ways we have contributed to making Canada a more decent country. But it was not always so. The Chinese came to Canada to build railroads and were treated very badly. They got one third of the wages than the white people got. And once they got, they built the roads and trade, and Canada was a very big country from one end to the other, 6,000 kilometers. And when they built the railroads through very difficult terrain in the mountains, and they were asked to get out, go back. And they were not allowed to bring their families. They put a hard tax on them. And it's only about 10, 15 years ago that Canadian government expressed an apology for what it did. And it was the first time in the history of Canada that a Chinese became the Governor General of Canada. It's quite amazing. A Chinese person who had come to Canada at the age of 2, immigrated, became the Governor General. Now, same way, some of you know some of the history of Canada, USA, Australia, New Zealand, the native people were not treated very well. They were treated awfully. And one of the things that happened in Canada was the creation of so-called residential schools, that the native indigenous children of the indigenous population, native people, were taken away from their families because their families are savages. They are savages. And if we want to educate them and to take away from their culture, they're not allowed to speak their language, take away from their culture. And the slogan was to take the Indian out of the child. It's the Indian, they were called Indians. To take the Indian out of the child. And once they were in their school, they were taught by priests, Anglican church ministers, and they were treated very badly. And some of them were exploited sexually by the priests. And it's only recently, just a few years ago, that a big report came out, big report, and I'm proud to say one of my nephews was on there, as was a lawyer for this report. And the report, the Chief Justice of Canada said, it was a cultural genocide. So, a cultural genocide. So, we are discovering, and then there expressed apologies by the Prime Minister of Canada, Trudeau. And increasingly, the idea is that past has been not pretty in many parts of the world. We have done awful things to other people. Lot of awful things. But to move on into the future, to be wise about it, I wish more and more countries would learn from Canada and a few other countries and say, how do you live with the past to move on into a cleaner future? So it was expressed apologies and a lot of new things were being done for the native population. But the idea, why I'm sharing this with you, because the unity can be a hollow word. It can be a hollow word. It means nothing for people who have abused and misused for so long, or women who have been abused, and say it is a hollow word. So how do you make it real, tangible, concrete? And say, what policies, what do you think, do culturally, socially, and anthropologically, so that there is more fairness, more justice, more equality, more recognition, more acknowledgement, more dignity. At every level. So our age is asking for and struggling to see what is this, to acknowledge each person's uniqueness and dignity so that everybody feels that they have a place on this at the table. Because in a way, women have been saying history is his story, not her story.
So true.
History is his story, men's story. And even in men's story, it is not even the story of the people, it is the story of the kings who ruled and the aristocracy. They wrote the story and they glorified themselves. Now, I wish to share with you, because I think there are certain things I feel quite strongly about. This is a 2018, is a special year. It is the 100th anniversary of the end of the First World War. 100th anniversary. The First World War started in 1914, and it continued till November of 2018. And this was supposed to be only for 6 months, 4 months, and it went on. And it was called the Great War, the war to end all wars. And then 20 years later, we had another war. And that was even more devastating than the First World War. And the First World War, new weapons of destruction were generally created by wonderful scientists, by technologists, by engineers, by mathematicians. New kind of gases to kill people. Tank was invented at that time. trench warfare was invented. And it was miserable how people died. Millions of people died. And these are war that was between people who were very civilized. It was the European War. Yeah, it was the European War. Germans, French, English, the Russians joined in, and the Turkish joined in. It was a war. And then we are discovering now in India, because India was a colony at that time, 1.2 million Indians went to fight for the British. And these are people who never even knew where the hell France was. They had no idea. They had never been out of the country. And more than 70,000 of them died. So everywhere the question was, here is a war that consumed so much energy and so much talent of people. These are the great scientists were making new weapons of destruction. So many young people, young men, women were not fighting in the war at that time, now women are joining as fighters. But at that time, so I'll give you an example of a university which was the most brilliant university in the world. Highly rated, highly admired, everybody wanted to join it, study there, and that was Oxford University in England. About one third of the graduates of year 2, 1913, died in the war. 31%. Amazing. Shocking. These are only the men, hardly, there were hardly any women students at that time. And it's amazing. And these people were fighting for freedom. And they were imbued with this idea, we are going to save our culture, our civilization, fighting for freedom. And gruesome war. Gruesome war. And it, as I'm a scientist myself, and I have my friend here, scientists, and a few others here, I feel sad that my fellow scientists contributed so much to making this war so devastating. And then the second war started. And we created new weapons of destruction, atom bomb. New weapons of destruction. And so I feel, really for us human beings, to create a sense of unity with each other, oneness with each other, care for each other. We really, all of us, have to be committed to peace. All of us. This should be an integral part of our life. And I say, and it is possible to do it. Because everywhere, wars are fought by fear, a distrust of other. And I see in India, there's billions of them. They recently, the Prime Minister announced he's going to buy $1 billion of weapons from USA and Israel. And so I said, what for? And the USA is increasing its defense budget every year now, increasingly more and more and more. So what for? Who do you care for? So it's extraordinary. It's destructive. So much. I fear that we are always fighting, we cannot trust, this is how life is, this is how human nature is. It is foolish to think like this. Human nature is not meant to fight. Yeah? If we begin to explore other ways of resolving conflicts, many other ways of resolving conflict. Of course, conflicts occur, but there are different ways of resolving. We don't do this in our own country. We don't go killing each other because somebody, we say, listen, there's a police, there's a court, they go to the court, they let you decide, and then say, and hopefully, you know, decide like this. So I feel strongly, very strongly, that all of us who are really committed to the idea of human unity should be equally, even more so committed to the idea of peace. We have a beautiful peace table here in the back, created by a Japanese architect. And this idea of peace. And peace is not just a passive idea that you close your eyes and meditate. That is peace. That is, of course, inner peace is very crucial. And I will talk about it next week. But inner peace is very crucial. But it doesn't stop there. It has to be also outer peace. Peace between people, between nations, between communities, between neighbors. Because if that peace cannot be resolved in working terms, then inner peace can also be disturbed. I want to finish my talk and then we have a question answer here. We're happy to for a few minutes. Let me share with you something very, it touches me deeply. Till about 100 years ago, we had no idea what is the source of energy of the sun. What makes the sun shine and give all this amazing energy? We had no idea. People speculated. Great scientists speculated, And they wondered, where could it be? What is this source? It is not oil, it is not gases, it is not wood burning there, it is not coal. What could it be? How so burning for such a long time? And it's burning, and we on the earth could not survive without the heat and the warmth of the sun. Let's see, where is it coming from? And I feel proud that two of the great scientists of India contributed to that mystery, solving that mystery. And one of them was from Tamil Nadu, from Chennai, Chandrasekhar, not Chandrasekhar. He was a professor of astrophysics at the University of Chicago. He was not the only people, others contributed as well. So first time we begin to discover in the 1920s that the source of heat, of this incredible energy, not only our sun is not just a small little star, there are trillions of stars in the universe. There are 20 trillion galaxies. So there are trillions of stars. I just don't know where the hell they are, what they do there. And it's so much energy. You see, so only about 1920s they begin to understand that there is a process called fusion. And most of the gases there on the sun is hydrogen. And it becomes helium and combined, fuses together, it releases energy. And releases energy according to Einstein's equation of E equals mc squared. Amazing discovery. And then, but what did we do once we discovered this? This is a remarkable discovery. So two kinds. One is fission, you cut the atom into two parts and the process releases energy. And the other is fusion, you combine the two together, releases energy. Both remarkable insights into the working of nature. And so what did we do? The first thing we do when we discover this energy, we make a bomb. Okay. We made a bomb, hydrogen bomb. We didn't create electricity out of it. That came much later. We still don't create fusion electricity. But so what did we do? And same thing when we discovered fission as a process of energy, what did we do? We make it a bomb. So human beings can be quite crazy. Martin Luther King, the great leader of USA, black leader, he had a remark which I find. He says, "We have guided missiles and misguided men. We have guided missiles and misguided men. We have made extraordinary discoveries and inventions in science and technology, but we have not moved forward very much spiritually. What should be the right thing?" That's where spirit comes in. What should be, how can we live ethically, morally, harmoniously, in caring for each other as people? That step is still a long way to go. We have done amazing things in science and medicine and technology, amazing. And we should be proud of it. We're not going back. But nevertheless, there are many other steps to take to the idea of unity. And that unity, really, in a way, recognizing uniqueness, diversity and commitment that life can be lived differently than we have done before, and lived by direction that is guidance that we receive from within, from our great visionary leaders, from our great sages in many parts of the world. But it's essential for us to evolve further. We started, as I said, biological evolution, cultural evolution, and I really wish to now finish by saying the evolution that Sri Aurobindo talks about, the spiritual consciousness evolution, that will drive our evolution further, not necessarily different kind of bodies, but different kind of mindsets, different ways of thinking and being, different ways of being, and that ways of being, what extraordinary things can happen. So I speak with hope, I really speak with hope, that extraordinary things can happen when we begin to be guided, not this idea of seeking power over others, destroying others, making H-bombs and atom bombs, and thinking that that's the only way to empower the other country and other people, other races, but really say how to live with each other harmoniously, celebrate and rejoice and recognize each other's humanity. Okay, thank you very much. Now we have about 10 minutes or so to Questions, comments, so we can keep it brief so that everybody gets a chance to share. I'd be happy to listen to you, to hear your comment or your question. And then I have another session next week and say, how do we build from here? Because that's really very important. Okay, any?
Yes, please. Thank you very much. I'm happy you said questions and comments. I've just been to Tripoli for a festival, and they only said questions, please.
Okay.
In Chinese, you have a beautiful sentence, when man is born, his being is good. It's beautiful. So when man is born, his being is good. Yes. And Confucius' main tenet is how to evolve your character. When you take the word evolution back from the L, we have the word love. Isn't it beautiful? Evolution 100% will go towards love. Thank you very much.
That's good. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Absolutely right, in a way. Yeah. I shared a great poet, Kabir, of 15th century India, 3 days ago in a poetry recitation. He has a very beautiful line. He says, he said, there is many a man who has read all the books, but rarely there is a man of knowledge. To be a man of knowledge and wisdom, you need to learn only one word, and that word is love. Pothi padha padha janam hua, pandit bhaya na koi, bhai aakar prem ka padhai so pandit hua. You know, one word. So the word love, dignity, these are words we have used for so long, they're part of our language for so long. But how to make it come alive in our amongst us. Yes, please.
Next week, will you be speaking more, even specifically about Orville? Or can you say anything now about
Orville? I will. I love this discussion community. I will very much.
Yes. That's a great effort to have humanity live together and bring these principles forward.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. Yeah, very much. Yes. Any other comment, question? I hope I am not picking on any country or people, but just trying to give you a little story of humankind. And everywhere people have done wrong things, destructive things, and it is time to move on. And acknowledge what you've done wrong, acknowledge, ask for forgiveness, whether it is a person or it's a community, and then move on, so that we can build a better future, a new generation. I may not be around, but life goes on. Yes, please.
Do you think technology and the... Do you think the advancement of technology and the fact that the world is becoming... communication is becoming so much more available...
Yes.
..is helping to move towards human unity?
Sure. It is a communication as a communication... as communication technology, communication revolution has been... very crucial in connecting us together. It was really not possible earlier to do that. It is a contribution quite remarkable. It's very important. Please.
To that, I would say that I'm a teacher, and I see that so many more young people are playing. Are addicted to games which have so much violence in them. And I would also say that I was born and brought up in the north of India, and I come from a family where we always sat together, ate together, talked to each other. We had depth of feeling for each other, and in the same family, in this generation, I see because of technology distance. I see our young people, in spite of best of our efforts, drifting away from us. And I really see a lot of challenges that the technology is bringing, and I have a feeling that, you know, and weapons of destruction are becoming so easy to use that with a with one button you could be killing and not feeling the impact of who you are killing and what their lives are would be. And so I really feel that technology is making it way more difficult. And also I would speak to this that I am finding that yes, we can talk about peace, but I am finding that even in homes it is becoming very difficult to see harmony anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. No, I just mentioned to you that the person in the New York Times said this 2017 is the best year in the world. And just last week, UK, United Kingdom, has declared a set up a Ministry of Loneliness. A Ministry of Loneliness was established in UK just last week. And then they said there are 9 million people in Britain who have declared themselves that they are lonely. And what impact it is having on lives of people. So that's incredible, extraordinary. Loneliness, unconnected, uncared. So, you know, this what does it do to you, and to the whole system of medical system and health system and so. So there are many things that are technology is contributing to certain things, but also alienating, distancing, as though we don't need to talk to anybody in person, chat, laugh with each other. On the dining table and share. Very important. I think very human contact and human dialogue, human being together, sharing, laughing, arguing, debating. I hope they never go away. Okay. Yeah. Please.
Thank you. I just want to comment also a little bit on that technology, because I have the feeling there are like two forces on. There's one force going to this unification. And I admire your generalists. You're really generalists. You are so you can see the parts from a higher level. And but there is in my daily life also a force to fragmentation, you know, and in our society we have a very strong fragmentation, you know, and all this pluralistic and individualistic, this identity politics, it's going to do so small fragments that they don't see the unity anymore.
Yeah,
and so we need a very strong force to combine this very positive development to this pluralistic state, but don't leave it there. It will just fly apart.
Yeah. Yeah. Forces of fragmentation are very strong, and many forces are identity politics. People become globalization has created new kind of identity politics in smaller and smaller groups, and we wonder why this hankering, this wishing to belong to a group so that you feel I'm safe, I'm secure, right? And that's why I can talk to only those people. Very sometimes here in India is exploited a lot, caste system because of that. Politics plays a lot of role. Yeah. Exploiting is in this group. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
All world cultures talk about the unity of humankind. In Arabic, Tawheed, God is one, humankind is one. In Sanskrit, Vasudeva Kutumbam Kam, this world is one family. In Chinese, all under heaven, one family. Or you're all one in Jesus Christ. And in Africa, there's a beautiful word called Ubuntu. Perhaps you know it. Togetherness. Because we are, I am.
Yeah.
Because we are, I am. Isn't it fantastic?
Yeah.
And in many languages, I and we is the same word. In Chinese, in Arabic, it's quite similar. In Hindi, I've heard I and we is the same word. And in Vietnamese language, I, you, he, we is the same word. We're all one.
Yes.
Isn't it fantastic? And to finish, I have not known that the pupil is a real mirror. So I look into the eyes of a beautiful lady or a handsome gentleman, I see myself. I'm kind to him because I'm kind to myself. I attack him, I attack myself. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Thank you very much. Yeah. Very, really sharing the other. See one light that shines in all of us. To recognize that, very important. ek jag, ek nur se sab jag ek jag. From one light all has come to me. From one light all has come. Ek nur se sab jag ek jag. Kon mane ek kon. Who is good? Who is bad? These are all delusions of your own mind. Okay, anyhow, this is, thank you so much.